As I hear about that project, and as I was reading the book, I had the thought that an audio interview really doesn't do justice because there's such a visual component. And when I hear about you going to the Peter Madden workshop, the bookmaking class, I think about how your poems were projected on a wall in Redmond, Washington, when you were poet laureate. And there's a section of the book where these poems are broken out. So I can see them in my head, but it requires someone to buy the book or to get it at the library or whatever to mm-hmm. have the same experience. So I just have to say, as a disclaimer, it's very important to note that the audio doesn't really do it full justice, especially since there's such a strong visual component to, I think, probably just about everything you've ever done. There are other interesting moments in the book that I'd really like to talk about. From your chapter, Mothering, there was something called the Netra Basti treatment, which just sounds fascinating. I don't know from what culture that comes, but maybe you can tell that story. And then there's one other thing.
Yeah, so the Netra Basti. So I write about in my essay, Mothering Time, about the period before I became a mother. I had some challenges around conceiving, and a lot of it was the stress that I was under with the work that I was doing. And I also think that part of it too may have been that at the time that my partner and I were considering having a child, we were living in a very inhospitable place in the deep south. And so maybe the body just didn't want to cooperate. It didn't make sense. So this sort of challenge around being able to conceive, infertility, probably went on for about a year, and I decided we're leaving the South, we're moving back to Seattle, which feels like a good place to live and have a life, have a family. So before we came back, I decided to do this major life detox, and I quit my job at a small family foundation in outside of Little Rock, Arkansas, and I went up to a small town outside of Montreal, Canada, called Lamoricie. And I'd chosen this particular retreat center because a practitioner I had been seeing in Dallas got her training and was very connected to the community around this teacher, Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. So the Netra Basti comes out of the Ayurvedic tradition of medicine, which is an ancient Indian medical system from which parts of acupuncture may also derive. So in this particular system, they have a number of treatments for sort of cleansing the organs of perception, let's say. And in this case, I knew that I wanted to do something to actually help to heal my eyes. So just some a necessary backstory. For many years, I started wearing glasses when I was probably about 9 years old and wore them into my 30s until a time when I decided to have my vision laser corrected. And so I've always kind of had this difficulty with my eyes and my eyesight. And this is a more personal story, but at the time when I first got glasses, I probably didn't need to get glasses. I was 9 years old, and at that age, that was the age when my older brother started wearing glasses. And my father was really convinced that he would treat his children exactly the same. So the way that it was determined that I, as a 9-year-old girl, needed glasses was that my father, at dusk, when the sun was setting, made me stand across the street and attempt to read the license plate on my mother's car that was parked in our darkened garage. And that was the eye test. The eye test to see if I might be nearsighted was as simple as that, and the decision that she needs glasses. And so I think there was part of me that always sort of felt like when I decided to get my vision corrected in my adulthood, that this was a way of kind of reclaiming what had happened to me. And even though the vision is corrected surgically, I think that there are other energetic things that need to be addressed, right? And so for me, I felt like my third eye or my intuition had probably been hampered for a lot of my life as a result of some of this early, I will say, trauma. So I had a feeling that this particular treatment could be something that could be important to my healing. And I wasn't even thinking of it in the context of the things that I was going through around fertility or conception, but it was really just, I felt very out of touch with my intuition, or that I couldn't always access it. And so that was my intention with getting this particular treatment. The naturopathy itself, what a practitioner does is they build a mountain, or let's, how to describe it? They build a volcano of dough around each eye, one eye at a time. So they take this dough and they kind of build out a structure, a cone shape that's projected off of your face, and they warm the ghee or the butter that is used to cleanse your eye, and it's poured into this volcano-like receptacle so that your eye bathes in ghee. And that is considered to be very nourishing to your tissues and to your vision. And you basically close your eye when the oil is poured into this container, right? And you aren't meant to look or see your practitioner as they're working on you, because the idea is that this treatment sort of resets your visual database. At one point, the practitioner will ask you to open your eye and to do a series of movements or exercises with your eye. And then when that side is complete, you close your eye, they drain the ghee out, and then they work on the other side, basically. So after this treatment, you just lie on the table, and it's just a time for integration, for healing. And when I had that particular treatment, you know, I'd gone in thinking, oh, this will help me with my eyesight, you know, on a very sort of functional level. The thing that occurred for me instead was that I had this very deep, transformative experience of having a vision emerge and appear to me. And that was an image of my mother, actually, as I had never seen her. It wasn't like a picture I have of her or a memory I have of her. It was actually an image of my mother in sort of her radiance and her happiness and joy. And as she was sort of regarding me, or I was regarding her, I had this beautiful opening and understanding that this experience of looking at her was actually me looking upon the sort of universal maternal love, if that makes any sort of sense, that she was the symbol or representation of that, but that it was the connection to that greater maternal love that is actually also present within me. And because at this time I was struggling with issues around conception and fertility, it was, I think, in some ways, a sort of affirmational image or gift that was given to me in this moment of struggle around whether or not I could be a mother, or I wanted to be a mother, or I should be a mother, but being able to access in such a deep way as to know that that was a very primal and embodied memory within myself.
That's pretty fucking heavy. That's pretty amazing. I don't want to undergo this procedure. So you're a better human than I, but I'm fascinated by it. And there's so many things that come from that that one could ask about. One is the connection to, obviously, ancient Chinese, which is your heritage, ancient Asian wisdom traditions, which we can learn so much from, and I'm a big fan of traditional Chinese medicine, the notion of being open to the energetic and how your background may make you more open to the notion that the energetic is at work in our life a lot more than, you know, thousands of times more than traditional American materialist culture would lead us to believe. There are those things, the notion that this is a procedure probably not approved by the American Association of Ophthalmologists.
That's right.
So many different things come up when I can discuss it, and so many different directions we can take it in. But, you know, you talked about, I mean, obviously this is your mom you're talking about, this vision that you have, and something else in Mothering Time in the chapter that we're talking about is you noted that being pregnant was a profound experience of being alone.
Yeah.
And so maybe you can elaborate on that and talk about what seems to be important to talk about regarding that.
Yeah, so, you know, I only know what pregnancy was like for me, and it seems like pregnancy for many women is a time when, you know, they're filled with health and vitality, and, you know, they care for themselves, or they feel better than they've ever felt, you know, because they're taking vitamins or eating right or, you know, whatever the thing is. And for me, pregnancy was very lonely and difficult, in part because before I conceived my son Tomo, I had a miscarriage. And so I think I carried with me this fearfulness that something could go wrong at any time with Tomo's pregnancy, with my pregnancy with my son, not knowing. And so this uneasiness went with me. And because miscarriage is not something that's openly talked about in our culture between women, between men and women, it's this thing that happened that I had to erase or put away and, you know, focus on the act of pregnancy. So I think there was the processing of the grief around that, because one child does not replace another. During that time, my work schedule was very different from my partner's, who had very long hours at night. And so a great deal of the pregnancy for me and a lot of the medical appointments happened on my own. I was going through this journey by myself and had a lot of fear about whether or not things would be okay. So I think it brought up for me the isolation that I can sometimes feel as a writer, just sort of struggling with this thing that I'm trying to literally give birth to in writing or through the arts, and feeling like the uncertainty and unknowing of that. So there was that element, but there was also, I think, the element of the loneliness and isolation of being different, being Asian, not being, you know, white, also kind of being reminded of that. And so I think there were a lot of these different factors that made pregnancy feel like a very vulnerable time for me, that was also compounded by, at a certain point in one's pregnancy, you cannot hide it anymore. And it then becomes very public, because physically, you know, people are going to notice, they're going to ask you all kinds of questions, they're going to touch you, they're going to make assumptions about, you know, how you're going to give birth and where. And so I think another thing is that my value system is very different than a lot of people that I was encountering. My husband is an acupuncturist, and we were both very opposed to a hospital birth with any kind of intervention. We don't believe in medicalized birth. And so we got ourselves a midwife, and we had a completely natural home birth without any medical intervention. And that was also a pretty radical choice. Yeah.
The bumper sticker says midwives help people out.
They sure do. Yes. Yes. They are our guides. They are our guides through, my midwife. She led me through probably the most profound experience that I may ever have as a human being. I haven't experienced very much death at this point, but I think the experience of giving birth, that was definitely something transformational.
When you started talking about your experience of being pregnant, I wanted to say one time, and then I realized, no, it's two times.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. There are certain mothers who have miscarried who will say, you know, I mean, it's not inaccurate to say that my son Tomo is my second child. And that is a way to honor and acknowledge that there was another child, there was another soul. And I have personally found it difficult to claim that or to say that, but I know that it's true.
Yeah. A lot in common with being a writer, you say anxiety, fear, failure, and it's a very interesting way to look at it.
Lack of control, you know. Fear of outcomes.